good evening. Thanks for joining us tonight. As always, between 7 and 9 o'clock, football is the order of the day, and that is the topic discussed. And tonight we've got a very special show in a week in which we have witnessed hundreds of millions of pounds being spent by football clubs, players going on strike, and two of the biggest clubs on the planet unable to exchange a few documents to get a transfer deal over the line on time. We're shunning all that nonsense this evening, and we're focusing on the roots of football that affects so many people up and down the country and, of course, the county. Greg Dyke suggests that the game at amateur level is in a degree of crisis. Do you agree? Do you play, or are you involved in the game as a player, coach, parent, or simply a spectator? What are your experiences like? Are the facilities up to scratch? Is the coaching good enough? Is enough being done to tackle the issues that might stop someone from continuing to play the game? This isn't all about finding the next England hero, but also about enjoyment. And is it still enjoyable for you? And what would you do to improve the game? And where would you spend the money the FA has committed to the grassroots game?
The best of Wednesday Night Live on Radio Yorkshire.
Anything you want to share tonight, then get involved tonight. Any questions too, you can use the hashtag State of the Game. You can tweet us to @radio_Yorkshire. And fear not, Leeds United fans, we'll hear from Greg Abbott after 8:30 later on in the show. He'll look back on the solid starts of the season for Leeds and a productive transfer window. Well, let's introduce our guests in the studio. I'm very excited that we are looking at the grassroots of the game. Another special here on Wednesday Night Live. We did one of these shows back in July. It was a big success. There was a lot of interaction, a lot of people getting involved and sharing your thoughts. So we thought it was about time we looked at the issue once more. And from the West Riding County FA, we've got Daniel McGeechie. Daniel, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks for having us again.
Good. Yeah, great to sort of do this again, I think, because, as I say, the response was massive in July to what we'd done. There was a lot of discussions in the air. We probably could have gone on for 4 or 5 hours. And there have been quite a number of developments as well over the summer, haven't there?
Yeah, I think it was really well received. Like you say about timing, when you've got Manchester United and Real Madrid struggling to get their business done, you can imagine how tough it must be for amateur teams going into the new season. But yeah, I think last time that we did this, it was really well received. I know that people have been contributing via Twitter over the last few days with questions. So hopefully we'll be able to give answers to those that are asking the questions.
Yeah, well, the one thing we'll give everybody, people who maybe didn't hear the show in July, we'll give people a bit of background to the West Riding County FA and all the work. But you know, this might not be a glamorous issue. It might not be something that sells newspapers or anything else, but it affects so many people, doesn't it? There are so many people playing football or connected to amateur football at some sort of level in the county.
Yeah, so we've got around 1,000 clubs in our county. Mm-hmm. So we're huge geographical boundaries going out to Goole, up to almost the Lake District. And with that, you look at the players that are in the game and the volunteers, the coaches, the referees. We've got around 75,000 participants. That's a massive, massive percentage of the population in our area that are involved in the game. Everybody, I think, knows somebody that's involved, whether it's a grandson, a son, daughters, wives. Everybody's involved in football in some way, and it is quite an emotional link that people have to the game, whether they've played it growing up and have fallen out of it. So I've been surprised by the response and how many people do have a view on this topic and grassroots football generally, especially with the huge sums of money that have been bandied around and large figures that have been quoted. People really want to know what that means to them here in West Yorkshire, and that's what hopefully I'm here to provide some answers for.
Yeah, and even if you're not, you know, you're not involved directly right now with a grassroots team or anything else, the big issue always comes up, doesn't it? When England fail at a major tournament, we then look to the grassroots of the game. We wonder if that is what's failing the national teams. There's that link as well.
That's it. And there's something that I'm really, really keen to get across is that we've got 75,000 participants, but even if you're not linked to a club or playing the game at the moment, you can still be a game changer. You can still have an opinion on it. Your opinion is still as valid as anyone else. As an organisation, as a county FA, we're 20-odd paid individuals who are there to develop the game, but we can't do that just with our opinions. So anyone who's got an opinion on the game, anybody who feels that they can have a positive influence, we're there to serve them at the end of the day. We're there to serve the community, and that's providing football opportunities for everybody and making sure that those who are playing the game, a lot's often said this new money is going into creating opportunities for new teams. What are we doing for those who are currently playing the game? Well, that's what we need to hear. We need to know what you want if you're playing on a park in Beeston or if you're a Sunday league team in Bradford. We need to know that, and then we can hopefully start to address those issues and put the money into the right places.
Yeah, that's the question tonight. Where should the County FA spend its money? And tell us all about your experiences of playing football as well in the county. I'm also very excited to reveal our second guest in the studio. We've been chatting before we came on air, and I can't wait to put the fader up so everyone can hear David Martin, MBE, speak on the radio. I don't know if we've got to introduce you. We've got to introduce you properly. But David has well over 50 years experience connected with the game in this region, from being involved at Farsley Celtic, Guiseley, Garforth, and also Horsforth St Margaret's, Horsforth Hotel FC. He's been on the Horsforth Sports Castle and currently part of the Wharfdale and District FA. David, welcome to the studio. Welcome to Radio Yorkshire.
Thank you very much indeed.
Just tell us a little bit about where it all started for you and why you've spent such a long time and such a big chunk of your life ingrained, really, in the game in this region.
Well, I first started in the YMCA more than 50 years ago. I've been a member of the YMCA most of my life. My family were, so I suppose I sort of got involved in that. And when I was 17, I was active in the YMCA. And I became treasurer of the tennis club there when I was 18. But at 17, I was there involved in organising football matches and, both local and Yorkshire-wide and even national, because different YMCAs used to play each other at football. And once I passed my driving test, I had to drive the minibus all over the country because young people wanted to go down to London to the big YMCA there, or to Peterborough, or to Cambridge, or up to Scotland or Newcastle. So we did a lot of travelling, and that minibus was it wasn't the very most comfortable thing. But no, I mean, we had some fabulous times, and I'm sure there'll be some young people listening today. I mean, the good thing is you make lots of contacts and good friends from football, and quite a few of them I'm either godfather to the children and things like that, which is rather nice. And then, of course, it developed from there. I went to Farsley Celtic to watch a good friend of mine play football, and because I'm a very shy, quiet and retiring type, which, of course, I'm not, I just passed comment on something that was happening. Because I was a bit surprised. It was nothing untoward, by the way, but it was just, I thought, it's a bit of an old-fashioned way of dealing with something. So I passed comment, and they asked me if I'd like to be on the committee. And I thought, gosh, I only come to a football match. But anyway, cut a long story short, I did join the committee, and then I became football secretary, the main club secretary of everything, and the vice chairman and also treasurer for part of the time, and a trustee. Then I moved from there to Guiseley Football Club, which was fabulous as well. I mean, it was great at Farsley Celtic. We had some fabulous times. Then on to Guiseley, and I was lucky at the time in being involved. And we got to two FA Vars finals at Wembley, 1991 and 1992. And the second one, I mean, I got Leeds United coach from Wallace Arnold, and we had a fabulous time. It was all exciting, both for us and the players. From there, I went to Garforth Town, who were a very friendly... Well, I mean, the other two clubs are very friendly, but Garforth Town's very friendly. They didn't have as good facilities as Guiseley or Farsley, but I got the job. It sounds as though you get paid, don't it, when you get a job? But the they didn't con me because they're lovely people there. But they asked me to be commercial manager, and because I've got the gift of the gab and going around catching things from people, I did that for 3 years, and then... one of my greatest friends in life was a player there, and he went to manage Horsforth St Margaret's, and I joined there as secretary and various other things. And then, of course, with the Wharfdale and District, I was chairman there for 7 years and still involved there. And they keep on relying on me to get sponsorship and do things. So, you know, it's been exciting. I mean, we've seen some hard times, some very sad times. It's not all rosy in anything, is it, in life? But also, at the end of the day, a lot of it's been absolutely fabulous. I've met some of the nicest people on earth. Some of them are great friends today. And, you also meet other people that you're not so keen on, don't you? That's life. Well, it is. It's life, isn't it?
It is life. So why commit so much of your life towards the game in the region?
Well, it's not just the game. I mean, I've been involved in lots of other things as well, raising money for charities and doing lots of other voluntary work. But my mother was a very strong character, and my father was. Sadly, he died when I was 8, so I didn't get a lot of him. But my mother was one that drove you into looking after other people, trying to do things without getting paid. I mean, her favourite, or hate, I suppose, it was something that she hated, was when people, if you ask them, can you do a job, they wanted to know how much they got paid for it. And I found that so much in football. You know, you've said to people, oh, you can't help, oh, how much do you get paid? And I said, well, you don't get paid, you know. I mean, there have been times when, it's been silly really, but I've said to them, well, how do you think I've got a new car? How do you think I've been on this fabulous holiday? You know, it hasn't been true because, you know, football hasn't paid for those things. But at the end of the day, sometimes you get fed up with people thinking there's something strange with you because you're doing it voluntary. But, you know, as Daniel will say as well, there's so many people involved doing it voluntary. I'm not the only one. There's hundreds. I mean, you know, the chairman of the Camp TFA, I know him very well, Barry Chaplin. He's worked very, very hard all his life. He's put as much into football. And, of course, Bob Secker, the president, they're lifelong people that have given so much. But there's in the county alone, there's hundreds, if not thousands. Well, there are thousands of people throughout all the clubs that are working hard, you know, cleaning dressing rooms, washing kits. And they're the unsung heroes, really, aren't they? I've had the jobs, I suppose, where as your club secretary, you're the one that's supposed to organise everything. You also get all the nastiness, I must be honest. You have to make sure, which is difficult, you know, to make sure that players are signed on at the right time. And when I was at Guiseley, it was done through the FA, and we could, by some teletext message or whatever, by 12 o'clock on a Saturday, you could sign players on. Woe betide you if it was a minute after. Thank God I never made that mistake.
Good job you didn't work for Real Madrid or Manchester United.
Well, isn't it? I mean, I'm proud that I've never done anything like that. You know, I've never... I mean, we all make mistakes in life, but I've never missed signing a player on or having letting a player play that's unregistered or anything like that.
Oh, you need to offer your services to the Spanish club.
Well, if...
Set your CV along, David.
The weather's very nice out there. Friends nice. Out there at the moment in Spain, and it's sweltering, they say, so I wouldn't mind being there, yeah.
What's the biggest change you've seen then over the odd last 50 years or so with regard to the game at grassroots level? Because you've been involved in it so long.
Well, I think I'm very sad that there aren't as many people committing themselves. More and more clubs are folding, and that's because they just don't have anybody to run them. And I feel so sorry at times. There's quite a lot of clubs in this county as well as elsewhere in the country run by perhaps one person. There's a young man often managing the team. He's taking the kit home and washing it or taking it to a laundrette. He's sweeping the dressing rooms. And if that person falls by the wayside, the club can fail. You know, and there's so many. In the old days, more people seem to get involved. You know, and I don't think they do today.
Do you think that's a generational thing?
Yeah. And yeah. I think it is partly generational, but I think also people are becoming, and it's going to sound controversial, but more selfish in life. You know, people want to look after themselves. I've asked so many people in my life, would you like to help with a small thing? Oh, well, I work. I said, well, so do I work, yeah. Oh, well, when I get home of my tea, well, I have to do the same. You know, we all do the same. Oh, well, I like to watch telly, and that's what it is, really. They want to watch telly, play on the computers, or just lounge around. Whereas they don't want to dash home from work as I did for so many years. I mean, you know, and you'd gulp your tea down, and you'd be dashing off. I mean, in football, especially at Farsley and Guiseley, and at Garforth as well, we're travelling all over the place, especially Guiseley when we got to FA Vars finals. You know, you're playing teams from all over the country and you're giving up your weekends. I mean, I've worked as a social worker all my life and, you know, you'd be at an away match at Barrow or somewhere like that, somewhere in Newcastle, getting home at midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, going to bed and getting up at 6:30, 7 to go to work. People aren't willing to do that today, are they?
Key point there that David mentions, isn't it, Daniel? About, I mean, we'll get into all the big issues and the finances and everything else, but the volunteers, you know, the game at grassroots level will never survive without people giving up their time, will it?
No, it's a bit of a cliche almost now, but volunteers are the lifeblood of what we do. Like I say, in the county, there's about 20 of us that work, paid professional staff to develop the game. And it's people like David. That was just fascinating for me, by the way, sitting here and hearing David's tales. And it's people like him, really, and people that are out there. He mentioned a few names that keep the game going, and volunteers really are the lifeblood. They are the unsung heroes, but sometimes even trying to find those people and recognise them isn't easy. So it's difficult for us because they're not in it for the glory, they're not in it for the recognition, or we want a reward from the FA. Yeah. They just want their life to be made easier, and that's something that we really need to focus on, trying to find more people like David.
Plus, you could have dinner at Downing Street twice. David, you were telling us they have revealing that. You've had Gordon Brown's lasagna.
Well, that's not through football, of course. That's through another big interest of mine, politics, yeah. And politics come into football very much.
Well, the politics of football is always it's a major talking point, isn't it?
You know, different governments, different councils look at things differently, don't they? And, I mean, I honestly feel, and that's perhaps controversial to some, but Leeds City Council have been pretty good. You know, I can only speak personally because I do know quite a lot about the council, and as secretary of Horse of St Margaret's, they couldn't have been better. They used to, you know, do the pitch very well and stuff like that. Mm. Of course, now there are problems because they just don't have those grants that they've had in the past. I mean, Leeds alone, although other cities have suffered, but mainly the north of England, have had their grants cut by 40-something percent. But if you've got nearly less than half of what you had previously, they're having to sit down and say, well, you know, with hundreds of millions of pounds less than we had last year, what are we going to do? And, of course, somebody's going to be upset, aren't they? Closing old folks' homes, social services, childcare, and lots of other things, you know. And, of course, football as well. You know, well, we can't afford to be doing so much. I mean, I know myself by being involved in the Wharfdale and District. Lots of clubs complain that, you know, the dressing rooms are appalling, the pitches aren't looked after properly. And then again, some of it comes back to the individuals, whereas in my day, I'm still here, aren't I? But years ago, we used to do more jobs ourselves. People today expect somebody else to come along, whether it's the council or some other body, to come and do things. We'd say, oh, come on, we'll get on with it ourselves. You know, if the council hadn't marked the pitch out, which was very rare, you'd do it yourselves. I mean, but they did 99% of the time.
If you agree, you disagree with anything that's being said tonight here on Wednesday Night Live, you can tweet us as the show goes along. Use the hashtag State of the Game. We'll pick those messages up. You can tweet us too at radio_Yorkshire. One of the reasons as well we decided to do this special again was because of the national game strategy. And Greg Dyke described the grassroots game, Daniel, as sort of on the verge of crisis, on the edge of a crisis. Is that something you're feeling at the Western Cape? Do you feel it was heading that way, or it is heading that way?
Yeah, it is. I think the adult game particularly, which is what a lot of people can relate to, there's a worrying statistic at the moment, local to us, that in 5 years' time we'll have half the number of adult 11-a-side teams than we did 5 years ago. Well, if in 10 years you've half the number of clubs you've got, you know that that's not a good sign. I think that to say it's in crisis is probably a fair assessment. It is in terminal decline, like I've just demonstrated with the figures there, and we do need to do as much as we can to keep people playing. And I think that a lot of the efforts which are implemented by the FA, £260 million over the next 4 years, yes, it's aimed at getting new participants involved, but really, really vital is that we make the enjoyment paramount of the people who are currently playing the game, because we're almost accepting, over the next 4 years as a county FA, we are accepting that there's going to be a dropout of adult 11 V11 teams.
Yeah.
It's reducing the damage, so to speak. We don't expect to retain the number of teams or even grow it. We know there'll be a drop-off because of all the societal issues that David's alluded to there. We just want to really minimise that and try and offer new formats, and anyone who wants to engage with the game, they can.
So in some ways, what you're saying there is it not necessarily, it is always going to come down to money in a lot of respects, but do the FA look at the grassroots game in the wrong way, talking about participation? Do they not maybe focus it on the ways that maybe it should be in terms of, as you say, increasing that enjoyment and looking after the people who are already playing, not worried about getting more people playing?
Do you know, I think the two go hand in hand. Yeah. I think the two really do go hand in hand, and if you enjoy the game, you're less likely to drop out. And we've talked before, if you know a group of lads that are playing the game and they're having a great experience, you're more likely to go and join in. It's not always glamorous. It's not a particularly great environment at certain clubs and in certain leagues. If we can improve that, and improve the conduct and respect and the facilities that people are playing on, then that's where the money needs to go, to keep the guys who are currently playing the game from dropping out. So, yeah, boosting, creating new teams, major priority. Giving money to teams to create, giving money to clubs to create new teams is a priority. But there has to be something there for the existing teams, and we really acknowledge that more than ever. It's something that keeps coming back to us from these 1,000 clubs that we've got. What are you doing to keep us going? You're generating money for new teams, but what are you doing for us?
Yeah, you're right, because I suppose if I had a group of my friends talk about what a great experience they had and the facilities were great and what a great game, what a pitch we played on, it's about like, yeah, if you're about a good restaurant, you're going to go check it out, aren't you? If you're hearing about the moaning, or this was awful and this wasn't up to scratch, it's not great. Can you explain, Daniel, how the funding works at this level? Because people quite often, and this is partly to blame, I think, from newspapers jumping on, it's the effort, it's the Premier League should be giving more money. Yeah. How does it work from the County FA's level?
Well, there's a couple of things that really are misconceptions. One is that the Premier League are sitting on a big pile of cash and don't give it out to grassroots clubs. Well, in Leeds alone, I can think of the most recent one, a club up in Addle, Leeds City. They benefited from £50,000 worth of Premier League funding this summer for some new facilities. That puts their facilities amongst the best in the West Yorkshire League now.
I think it's about £56 million a year or so from Premier League clubs.
Yeah, that money came purely from the Premier League. Yeah. It's administered through the Football Foundation, and this is where it can get a bit muddy, and I understand this. It can be difficult for clubs to take on board. Mm. But essentially, big capital investment projects, let's look at them separately. Since 2000, we've, as a county, seen £200,000 a month. £200,000 a month invested into big capital facility projects in our jurisdiction. That's a massive amount of money. So that's building new pitches, that's increasing the quality of natural grass pitches, building clubhouses, making sure that changing rooms are in good nick. And that's one thing that we really need to look at. But then there's the other little bits of funding that we talk about. How do I get a new kit? I'm trying to set up a new team, but I need to get league fees out of that and affiliation and all the new gear. We have small pots of funding that come from the County FA directly. So setting up a new team, it's £1,500. That's a great start for any club. The small pots of funding that we administer. And as of this year, because of this sort of new landscape that we're in, a new climate, we have a dedicated member of staff who is there as an investment and facilities manager for grassroots clubs. So every single grassroots club that might not have an expert in it around applying for funding to the Football Foundation and a Sport England bid for a 3G pitch, we've got somebody that we employ, that the FA pay for nationally, to be a representative of all those grassroots clubs. So even if you are a tiny club and a one-man band like David talked about, you've got a paid member of staff that's working for you to say, all right, I'll write your application. I'll help you write your application. Right. I'm giving him a lot of work there, saying he'll write your application.
I'll do everything for you. I'll come do your ironing, whatever you want.
Do you know what? We'll send out a member of the Institute of Groundsmanship to look at your pitch and say, do you know what? This is what you need to do to get another 10 games out of it per season. There's a lot that can be done if people just come to us and do it. And sometimes it's not money that's the answer to throw at it. People pay loads of money for a pitch verti-draining because Bob down in Dewsbury said it needs verti-draining. Yeah. Well, actually, do you know what? We'll send an expert out for you and try and save you some of that money. And I think that's something that clubs really need to understand. There are the big pots of money and there are the big figures quoted by the county FA, by the FA. There are also very manageable grants and fundraising efforts that we can do that will help you with your day-to-day running costs. That's it's no secret. It's just, do we communicate that well enough? I would potentially say not at the moment.
David, when you're listening to that, is it still some of the same problems you've always seen in the game, the sort of the facilities? Has that always been a problem, or is that something that's really happened recently with the cutbacks, as you mentioned, to local councils?
No, I think facilities have always been a problem. I mean, over the years, I've been involved in matches where we've gone to play games and things where players have got changed in cars, they've actually got changed on the field nearly, left all the clothes outside. It reminded me when I went to school, we used to do that, You get changed in the open air at Bedquilts in Addle and leave all your stuff at the side and go play whatever game.
David says that reminds me when he's a kid. I play Sunday League now, and this year the club can't afford a changing room at Bedquilts in Addle. So we are getting changed in the car park at Bedquilts and leaving the gear. And that's 2015, so still a very real issue, I would say.
No, it is, yeah. No, I agree. And, I mean, some things have improved. I mean, the funding that Daniel talks about is good, but it's still not getting through to a lot of the smaller teams. you know, the big things. I mean, I know Leeds City Boys pretty well because they did play at Horse of St Margaret's as our first team, and then they left and went to Addle Memorial Hall where they play now, and great bunch of lads. And they've been
I've just seen it at Memorial Hall as well. I was there in the summer when they were doing out their changing rooms as well.
Yeah, no, it's very nice there now. Excellent facility, and it looks nice, doesn't it? It's all very well kept.
Very nice.
And I mean, I'm a great ambassador for Addle, having lived there for so long and everything else, and spent half my life there. And I mean, they're a great set of lads, but they've got £50,000, which is needed. But there's hundreds of other smaller teams, Saturday, Sunday teams, that are still looking for money to pay for things. And what Daniel said, the staff at County have increased tremendously. They've got so many staff there now, which they never had before, who are very helpful and will go out and talk to clubs and help them and fill application forms in. But some people don't even approach them. I think there are teams out there that just moan and groan, carry on as they've always done. And, I mean, there are a lot of people out there, might as well be honest. I meet quite a lot of them through the District FA and lots of other things that condemn the county, saying the county don't know the first thing about football. They, that lot up there, they sat on their backsides. Well, I don't subscribe to that. I mean, anybody listening from the county will know that I've been a critic often, but I'm also a big supporter of theirs. Because, you know, they've worked damn hard, a lot of them, you know, for years and years. There needs to be changes, of course they do. They need to be more modern in their outlook in life, like the FA do. I mean, the FA was archaic, in my view, many years ago. I mean, there were very elderly men used to come to some of our FA Vars matches and used to think, good grief, he must be at least 90, that chap. And
the stereotype was accurate, wasn't it?
Well, yes, it was. Yeah. It was and you used to see a lot of elderly men turning up and, oh, I'm from the FA Council. And fine, you know, OK, these may be committed people, but you need a much more modern outlook. Greg Dyke, hopefully, will shake things up a bit. They've had far too many people leading the FA in the last few years. One person's gone, then somebody else has come, and somebody else, hopefully he'll stay and try and modernise things and improve. I mean, don't forget, the women's game has been fantastic, hasn't
it? Major
There's
strides,
been a major effort to, you know, help women's football and give them the money to set up and things like that. And certainly junior football, I mean, Horse of St Margaret's, where I've been involved, have got something like, I mean, it's about 45 teams. Well, a club having 45 junior teams, it's a big setup, isn't it? And I'm glad I wasn't secretary. I mean, nobody can be secretary of 45 teams. You know, each team have their own, like, secretary. They have an overall secretary, but they can't run each team. Like when I was at Farsley, I mean, I had two Saturday teams, and then, well, we had three at first, then two, and then we had a junior section that I used to be secretary of at first. But then when there's more and more teams coming, you can't cope with it all, because all you're getting all day long and every night is phone calls, letters, people shouting and yelling about things. And, you know, you've got to be pretty organised to do that. And, you know, there's a lot of teams in our district that need help, and financial help as well as manpower.
It's whether they're coming to find that help or getting
through to them. It is, and I think one of the big things, and David's touched on it there, and as a county we do... Do you know what? I think it's essential that we uphold those traditions and sort of embrace the legacy of the past. We've been the governing body of football for 100 years, but it is really important that we do remain progressive and energetic and innovative and change to adapt the needs of football as it is now. Yes, our council members and directors are probably in their... Some of them are in the 60s and beyond, and they've been in football for a lot of years and know what the landscape looked like. But as well, we've got our development staff that David's alluded to that are there to really have the finger on the pulse and are all involved in the game. We're all involved in the game. So when people are saying, as David's mentioned, County FA are in touch with what's going on in the game. I play on a Sunday. We've got lads who play on a Saturday. Yeah. We've got a women and girls officer who's played around the women's county. We've got a disability officer who understands the game. It is about really... Just being progressive, like we say, and understanding the frustrations that are going on and being there, being in the field.
Another thing as well, Daniel, is educating people to understanding, because I think, again, maybe and I'm generalising and I'm speaking for a lot of people who probably play football at any level around the country either, but they'll see the money that's knocking around the Premier. They'll see £900 million spent on transfer fees. They'll see the £5 billion TV deal. They'll see the FA, you know, bringing in untold amounts of, yeah. of revenue from games that went and everything else. And it's the correlation between that and how come I don't have a changing room on a Sunday. And I think we talked about it on the last show in July, but that the issue of where it falls under council jurisdiction with regard to some facilities and everything yeah. else, and how much the FA should actually get involved and actually try and make up that shortfall. It's a huge shortfall, and they probably can't do it financially, but does football, do that higher echelons of the game have a duty of care to actually step in, considering the cutbacks that have been made, the necessary cutbacks in many areas?
Yeah, I think so. And I think something that's really important to remember is, even from a local authority point of view, that football pitches are still a subsidised area. Mm. So it's still a subsidised service provision for many local authorities. The FA and locally, the county FA, we do have a responsibility to make sure that clubs are able to afford to play the game. We're doing all we can to make the physical aspects of playing football cheaper. So we've, in our four-year plan, that's our national game strategy, but over the next 4 years locally, we're forecasting a loss in affiliation income because we want to make it cheaper for clubs to play. So any absolute necessary cost that we can reduce, we will. The argument,
because that became a bit, that was a big issue, wasn't it, on the last show? People were saying it's getting more and more expensive, so, creeping up, can't afford it.
The argument comes when you're spending £1,000 a year for a changing room in a pitch, and your grass isn't being cut, or you've got no grass in your goal mounts whatsoever. It's difficult. It is really, really difficult to lay blame at anyone's door for that. One thing that I'm really, really keen on doing is making sure that clubs are financially sound and clubs are sustainable in themselves. So if you've a one-man band that's struggling to make ends meet, look at Leeds City Juniors. We've mentioned them already in Leeds City. Massive club.
Yeah.
From under eight girls to their first team, and their first team one of the most successful in the area. That sustainability piece and being part of a much bigger club really helps you financially. We know that. A one-man band that's running a team on a Sunday, if you've only got 20 lads signed up for your whole club, you're not going to be able to afford changing rooms and facilities because they're too expensive. But if you follow the blueprint of a successful club, if you can partner up with other clubs in the area, if you can come to us and we can book facilities for you on a bigger basis, I think that sort of small-minded mentality that some of the clubs will have through no fault of their own, because they don't know the help's out there, they think it's them against the world. Once that changes and people can start to see that there are blueprints, it's charter standard, but essentially it's a blueprint for running a club successfully, you follow that and it does work. We see clubs benefiting from it every single day. Yeah. We don't see enough of those, but we know that it can work.
It takes some I'd say special individuals really to do it. I mean, you know, Millshaw, we sort of heard the stories, you know, about them and how well they've done as well.
I mean,
they've gone out and made it happen, haven't they?
You look at Chris at Millshaw as an example, young guy, not necessarily involved in football before this, followed the blueprint of how to start a club. We can use Millshaw as an example to say that it can be sustainable, it can work, and you can have a lot of lads who enjoy playing football.
The great thing for Chris as well, one story that he told us really stuck out, was he went round knocking on doors of local businesses and saying, sponsor a player, get your name in the pro, or whatever it was. You know, actually went out there and got money.
Well, do you know what? I look at a club at the moment, Campion, who are a club who've started their own YouTube channel, Campion TV. Now, you're telling me that years ago any club would have done that? It's a grassroots club, and they're interviewing players and managers after the game and sticking it on YouTube and getting 500 views a time. That's something that anyone can do. Everyone's got a phone in the pocket. Everyone can do that, and there are ways of doing it. And it's just about sharing that best practice, creating a really good model that clubs can follow, and rolling that out, because we know it works for some. It's just not working for enough at the moment.
£260 million in from the FA. That's the headline figure. They want to establish 30 city hubs. They've talked about 4G pitches. There are a few statistics here with regard to the facilities in particular, and these have been trotted out time and time again, but over 5,000 3G pitches in Germany. We've got about 640 or so in this country. Is £260 million enough? And how will the... I know you explained a little bit earlier, but how will that money sort of filter down?
Yeah, so the commitment and the idea of the city hubs, we're lucky that you would imagine in the next rollout of city hubs that Leeds will definitely be one of them.
And what exactly will it entail?
It will be, so the 3G sites are for football use, solely for football use. You will have host clubs, you will have partner clubs working there, so it might be junior clubs doing their matches. You'll have open age teams using it for winter training when facility hire is too expensive and not accessible enough. And it will really be that the idea is that it's going to be the heart of football in a community, in a city.
Right.
3G facilities, we know you can get 80, 90 hours of football played on them a week, whereas a grass pitch you're only going to get two. So if we, the challenge comes with creating the hubs. As we know, you build a hub, it's not going to fix the problems. It's getting leagues to work with it and be flexible with kickoff times. So instead of getting one game on a Saturday afternoon, well, if we can stagger kickoff times, a whole league can play most of its fixtures on one Saturday. Get a whole round of fixtures in, so we can play more and more football on the sites if leagues will be flexible and change that, the attitude that David maybe mentioned, which is potentially 50 years out of date, we kick off on a Sunday at 2 o'clock on grass because that's what we do. But if leagues can change, when the community hubs come in, the potential's endless, because you can get junior teams playing on there, winter training, so clubs are forking out 80-90 hundred pounds an hour for a 3G at the moment. These will be heavily subsidised sites, and that really will be, to me, that's the vision. I know it's Greg Dyke's vision, it's what's been put in the chairman's commission. But even in the short term, before that happens, because we haven't even broke ground on that, and we're being presumptuous, presuming Leeds will be one of the sites. There are 3G pitches at the moment, there are 3G facilities at the moment that we can create as hubs. If a cluster of clubs in an area can get together and come through the power of the county FA almost, and the local authorities, we can create those little community hubs anyway. Let's not all wait for 5-10 years until we've got these shiny new facilities. And it's just about, like I say, sharing ideas, sharing best practice. If a number of clubs can come together in an area, then there's nothing to stop us creating that now. Linking an adult club to a junior club and putting them on a 3G pitch, it's not rocket science. We can still do it.
David, is that, when we talked earlier about maybe sort of a lack of volunteers or people who are willing to really put the time in to make it a success and part of the drop-off, is it therefore the responsibility of County FAs and the FA to make things as easy as possible, give people no excuses almost? For example, these hubs that you're hearing about there, is that the right way to go?
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds good and hopefully it'll work. There's still the problem that lots of clubs won't come together. That's the reality of it, that they've always been in opposition, and even if they're going to share a facility, you know, that you talk about a 3G pitch, you'll find that quite a lot of clubs that I know, God, we're not going to join together and use, well, we want to do this, you know, kick off at 3 o'clock or whatever, and there's not going to be that change unless, well, I don't know, there might be a miracle happens and people will change. But what Daniel says is right. I mean, if they can get fabulous facilities to be shared by a few clubs, that would be ideal, wouldn't it? I mean, it's not quite as easy. I mean, I know from the YMCA point of view, we applied for funding for our 3G pitch, couldn't get any at all, you know, so we paid for it ourselves, and it cost £540,000. Now, luckily we had the money. The good side is that we can decide who uses it, when they use it and everything else. Whereas if you do get this grant and stuff from other bodies, they often know, well, we want to decide what happens, we want to do this, it's got to be used for this, it's got to be used for that. In the past, money was given to various, I mean, third generation pitches or the ones before, where schools have had them, and they've not used them as they should have done. I'm not saying they've been doing anything illegal, but we've tried to use some of their facilities, like Horsforth School and places like that in the past. Oh, well, it's for our... It isn't, no. The money was given for community use and for school use. Ah, but the school wanted to dictate who used them. Now, we had to really battle to be able to use that for training, you know, and things like that. So it wasn't easy.
It's sad when you hear that, Danny. Battle. You had to battle. Yeah. It shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be a battle.
But, I mean, I have to say that what Daniel says now, I mean, there's much more modern thinking staff at the county, and they are working the socks off and they're working very hard. There's still a lot of people out there, and I don't know whose fault it is, really. Perhaps most of the blame is at the door of the football clubs, but they always say, well, we don't get any help, we don't get this, we don't get that. They never come to visit us. I say, well, hang on a minute. You've got to sometimes be proactive. Get off your backside and ring the county, or even just drive up. I mean, they might not be there, but just walk in and say, well, I wonder if you could help us in any way. because I've always been a person that just goes and tries to achieve something. You know, you go out there and you push and try to get things changed. And it's the same with the staff there. I mean, OK, they're rushed off the feet. They can't just drop everything and come within 5 minutes. But if people contact them and say, look, we need help, can you come along? Can you talk to us? Can you explain how we can get this or that? Things will improve.
Do you know, it's something that, David, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because it's something that we're really committed to doing now. And rather than working intensively with one or two or three clubs, we'd much rather make an impact on every single one of the 1,000 clubs. If every single one of the 1,000 clubs that we deal with got in touch with us tomorrow, I can categorically promise that we would make sure that every single one of those clubs had a positive engagement with us. And that's something that maybe it's historical, maybe it's a legacy and the way that people have dealt with us before. And usually you pick up the phone to the county FA, it's to pay a booking or to pay a fine. Or we have you in, or we have you down there
it's
for
the tax man.
Or we have you for a disciplinary hearing.
Yeah.
But people don't see the positive side of it. And I can categorically state, and I think it's the most open we've ever been. It's certainly the most open I've known the county FA in my short time there at the moment. We're really welcoming people to throw stuff at us. What are your problems? Yeah. We can't solve all of them, but we can certainly go a long way to helping you. And like I say, if 1,000 clubs got in touch with us tomorrow, we'd love it. Everybody would get a response.
What about the problem with regard to pitches and facilities again? Because it was something that came up a number of times. The council responsible. But I know you've had a bit of a response from
them, Daniel. If we asked the council some questions that were coming up through our Twitter Q&A, so a number of clubs, FC West Leeds, Headingley Rovers, to name but a couple, asked some really simple questions. One of them, why did the council take the post down over the summer? Now, I'll read that sort of word for word, the response I got, to be not accused of putting words in anyone's mouth, but one of the responses we got were, posts are removed over the summer to allow goal mouths to recover, and the posts to be inspected and painted prior to being returned to use for the start of the season. Now, that's a really obvious response.
Yeah.
Doesn't help when in pre-season training you've got nowhere to play. Clubs will come back to that, and it's something that we'll take back to the council and say, leave the posts up, we'll seed the goal mounts, and we'll paint the goal posts if we have to, because it's the facility that people need. They need local authority pitches. Another point which they raised, and it's such a simple one, why does it cost so much to hire a Leeds City Council football pitch? The response, not going to be well received by many, but again, it's quite simple from the council. They say, efforts have been made in the past to restrict uplifts on junior pitch provisions, and despite budget pressures, cost increases have been restricted to inflationary rises only. There are clubs who will hear that, and there's clubs who would respond to that if we put it out on social media right now, saying, we pay £1,600 for two of our teams to play on a Leeds City Council pitch, and we might only get 13 home games a year. When Chris was here last time, he sort of crunched the numbers on that.
I think it's 25% of games last year were cancelled due to bad weather or more importantly, the pitch.
And do you know what? It's something that we need to work with the council more. We do. And we really want them to engage with us. I know that the man who I mentioned earlier, Andrew Wadsworth, who's our investment and facilities manager, is trying to engage with local authorities all the time. We ideally want to be able to host an open forum where it's ourselves, the local authority, other key football stakeholders, and you can ask these questions and really get answers from them. We're not here to hang anyone out to dry now, and that's why I've sort of explained those answers word for word, but they're not satisfactory answers to a lot of clubs. We know that, but we can keep asking the questions, and that's about it. I think we do want a more transparent way of working with the local authorities, and Leeds City Council is a good place to start, as probably the biggest authority in the area, and the one that teams keep questioning about. It costs so much for 13 home games a year, and games are called off, and what can we do about it? So it's not ideal at the moment, and it's a big sticking point for us.
Big issue, David, from your experiences in the region, everybody working together, same goal, or are the council's hands just tied with this? There's not a huge amount they can do.
People say I'm biased. I've always found Leeds City Council, if you approach them properly, sometimes you have to pressurise them, you have to motivate them, but they've always been good in my book. Now, people in the district where I am, I'll say, yeah, it's all right for you because you know this person, you know that person, you've persuaded this and that. But other people can do it as well. I'm not a miracle worker. It's just because I've stuck at it. And I'm not here to speak on behalf of the council, but I can guarantee the leader of the council would agree with me. The two deputy leaders will definitely organise. I'm positive if they're listening, they'll perhaps say, oh, David, but it's simple to have a meeting with the county FA, with the teams as well. Let's have a question and answer thing. You want a few in different areas. You don't want one massive one where there's probably 1,000 people because people feel overwhelmed by that, don't they? But, you know, perhaps one in East Leeds, one in West Leeds, South, North, West, North East. Say 5 or 6, they have different areas that they work in the council. And let's have them.
I think it just
sit together.
It just comes down to transparency. Time and time again, it comes down to transparency. And I think that the more open we can be and the more we can publish how much it costs to run a club and how much it costs to have a pitch on a Sunday, the better. And I'm not saying the council aren't going to be forthcoming with that. It's something that we need to work on. But what keeps coming up time and time again, and it's we can't subsidise pitches for teams because there's just too many. We say we've got 1,000 clubs. But it is something that keeps coming up, and we really do welcome and need transparency and a really open way of working between all the parties here.
Because it's everybody benefits from this, don't they? I mean, everybody, from people playing, you know, the FA as well. It's a mutually beneficial thing if everyone works together.
Yeah, it really is. The clubs are the easy ones for us because we've got a direct link in with them, and they can. But if they keep asking us the questions, it's not really good enough anymore to fob them off with, that's the local authority's problem. Mm. We're all going to go home now. We need to work with them, and at the end of the day, we care. We really care about getting football on. It's not that we're. I always say this about, you know, we're not there selling double glazing in our job, our line of work. Everybody comes in because they care about football. I care about the game. All my colleagues do, and they want to make sure no one's there to make it difficult for people to play. So if it's affecting you as a club, it's affecting us as a county FA, and it's affecting us as individuals because I face the same problems. Like I've just mentioned, I get changed on a Sunday afternoon in Bedquilt's car park. I don't... When a club comes to me saying...
Nobody wants to see that.
They don't have
enough
money.
Nobody wants to
see listen, that. Some people would disagree, but we've got... you know, that's how it is, Tom. And I think that people sometimes have seen the county FA as a bit of a faceless, sitting in an ivory tower, making decisions from up on high, in isolation from the game. Well, that's just... It's just not the case, and I don't really know how to get that message across any more than I am doing at the moment.
The best of Wednesday Night Live on Radio Yorkshire.
That. In the studio tonight, we're discussing the state of the game, hashtag state of the game. We've got Daniel McGeechie from the West Riding County FA and also David Martin, MBE, who is going to regale in more stories about various places he's had dinner down the years. Downing Street, already mentioned. We're going to hear all about that. But we're going to tackle some more of the issues with regards to the grassroots of the game. Thanks for all your tweets and messages. We've had plenty in, plenty of emails too. We haven't been able to get through them all. We will read them all, that is for sure. But Daniel, some tweets that have come in, which probably from, I love the name on Twitter, Rosler's Mullet, probably some of the issues I was trying to get across earlier, that I think this is how a lot of people feel about the state of grassroots.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, an anonymous tweet does usually suggest it's going to be a bit of a cracker, and this one certainly is. I think that what is always good to see is the passion that people have got, and despite the line heads need to roll at West Riding County FA, I'm actually going to address the tweet in with the points it's made.
I'll read the tweet out, and it says, the number one issue is this: substandard pitches, kids playing in swamps, dog muck and long grass. Sky paid the Premier League £1 billion, that's even more than that, yet the pitch, five times more than that, yet the pitches used by our kids are a disgrace. Heads need to roll at West Riding County FA.
Yeah, I think we've addressed the pitch issue quite a lot, and we know that local authorities are going through cuts and everything. The development of kids, however, and developing future England players is so unbelievably important as part of the new strategy. The England DNA was obviously launched, a coaching philosophy about the ultimate aim being creating winning England teams and developing a way to play. And I think the development of young players is so important, something that goes so unheard of across the country, especially in our county, something called the FA Skills Programme. Now, you're talking about kids not having the best facilities there. What we do as a governing body nationally, and locally this happens as well, we put paid coaches, so the FA fund coaches that are high quality, trained to the youth modules and their coaching qualifications, UEFA B, UEFA A, you name it. They go into primary schools and coach 5 to 11 year old kids to develop those players and develop that talent. That's not something that any other governing body would do. You look at locally, the West Riding FA Skills Programme is actually starting again now, so in September, going into schools, running these skills centres for 5 to 11 year old kids, where they're receiving incredibly high quality coaching, tailored coaching for them, with great facilities and great coaches. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to reach every single kid in the county, and there are going to still be issues with substandard pitches and kids playing in as Rosler's Mullet puts it, swamps. But whilst we're developing as many opportunities as we can for 5 to 11 year olds through the skills programme, I think we're doing as much as we possibly can to address that. And that's where the money is coming to do that. And the kids aren't forking out the wages of all these coaches, you know. So the skills centres are something that, if you are looking for the development of young players, definitely check those out.
I suppose that is an issue that everybody sort of has an opinion on, isn't it? That the state, or where we've maybe got it wrong in this country with regard to young kids, and that, not only that participation, and obviously the facilities, which we've no doubt discovered doing these shows, that is the number one issue, is that it's the facilities. But in terms of that coaching, in terms of that success of the England team, is it too easy to point the finger at grassroots football as one of the factors in that? Is that a problem for the failure of the England national
team? There's something that keeps coming up time and time again, and it's about nobody's born in an academy, and every player has to come through the same grassroots system or the same junior set of football. And that's something that the England DNA exists to address. I don't know whether everybody will know about the England DNA, but it talks about the way we play, who we are, the identity that we want to develop, and how we coach. And I think that one of the big changes that I've seen is around using a really positive and enthusiastic manner with players and creating a really good environment for junior football. I've seen it, you'll have seen it, David will certainly have seen it. In the past, the environment for junior football and creating great players just hasn't been there, whether it's pressure from the sidelines, poor facilities, not great coaches. I say coaches loosely, often it's a dad, a mum, trying to coach a team. Now, with the DNA in place, with really accessible coaching qualifications for kids, the quality of coaching that's going on and the quality of football that is being played and the development is increased beyond recognition from what we've had in the past. And that will, there's no two ways about it, that will impact the future of the national team. Whether you look at the amount of homegrown players playing in the opening day of the Premier League, which is a stat that will be thrown straight back at us, probably on Twitter right now, the players that are coming through the England team now, you look at the players, we have to look over the road and look at the core of Leeds United's team, young British players playing a certain style of football that you just wouldn't have got in the past. Lewis Cook's with the England under-19s at the moment. Again, he'll be receiving the same ethos, the same style of coaching that an under-15 girl will receive in our player development centre, because we all play the same way. If you're on the England FA talent development pathway, you will receive the same coaching, the same principles, 70% ball rolling time, touches of the ball, than they will at St George's Park today with the men's team. And that will help England achieve at major tournaments. There's no two ways about it. I know Greg Dyke and Martin Glenn have talked about winning tournaments and putting deadlines on that. But
that has put a deadline on it. And the problem is, in this country, we're constantly, I mean, it all sounds very fancy what you're talking about there, Daniel. There's a lot of sort of management buzzwords in there, without a doubt, and it's great that actually something is in writing. You can see this on the FA website, but in it, I think 10,000-11,000 qualified coaches in this country, over 40,000 in Italy. I mentioned the stat about the 3G pitches. However much we put stuff in writing and say this is how we want to do it, if we're not backing it up with the resources, and that includes the manpower and actual coaches and facilities.
Well, there's a couple of things on that. Yeah. One, I'll just touch briefly on how they measure qualified coaches in the continent. It's actually different to how they measure it over here.
So that's skewed. That is skewed.
So if you've had a coaching badge 50 years ago and you're a coach in Spain, you're still counted in their coaches, whereas we only count active coaches. Right. Also, we're not really comparing apples with apples because their coaching qualifications are slightly different. So that's no excuse. There probably are more qualified coaches on the continent than over here. But the main thing that we talk about accessing those qualifications, if it's cost, which is what keeps coming back to us, it costs too much to do your level one, level two youth mods. We're now setting aside a big chunk of money to offer coaching bursaries. So that's live at the moment. You can go on our website, register your interest, and you can receive coach education, a world-class coach education program, as it's billed. The FA's coach education program is world-renowned. People come from other countries to experience a coaching course in Leeds, believe it or not. And that is now
many things and, people come around and the that world is now being, Leeds
that,
well.
That is now being subsidised. So we're trying to make it as affordable as we can, making it as accessible as we can.
Remove those obstacles, potential obstacles.
And do you know what? There's a huge, huge section of what we do that is free to access. It's free. It's on a weeknight. It's when you've finished work, you can go and get a coaching workshop and it won't cost you anything. People don't know about that. It's on our website under free coaching workshops, but I'm not saying everyone will access that. And it is about removing those barriers. I know there's a lot of fancy stuff. And do you know what? The England DNA and the way we play and the England philosophy means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but at least it's better than it has been. It's better than it has been, Danny. At least there is something.
I mean, I appreciate that a level one coaching course and a lot of coaching qualifications don't really mean much to your man who's coaching, managing a Sunday league team in the Combination League. He probably doesn't need them. He certainly doesn't need to spend that much money on them. But they are there for the guys who are working with young players or the guys who have aspirations to be a professional football coach.
Nice string to your bow, isn't it? David, from your experience, what you've seen, participation, that big issue now, does it go along with a lot of the issues we talked about earlier about volunteers and people needed? Is participation a big issue now? Are people drifting away?
Well, I certainly think it is. I mean, young people today seem to have so many other interests. Perhaps years ago, football was a major, major thing, along with other sports, of course. But today, people seem to have so many other interests and they want everything in a pleasant, warm, nice environment. You know, they don't want to go out and play a game in foul, horrible weather. I mean,
don't
as a secretary... Well, that's it. I mean, I've stood at the pitch side as secretary for two solid hours, getting freezing cold and wet and miserable. I've loved it, I must admit. I've enjoyed it and things like that. But so many people today want things on a plate. And I must mention the dog muck thing, because it is one of my pet hates. So if there's anybody listening there, I love dogs. Absolutely. Yeah. There's no bigger dog lover than me. I love them. But I would never walk my dog or anybody else's dog across a football pitch. And every day I see people walking dogs across football pitch when there's bags of other space. Yeah. Why they have to walk across a football pitch and let the dogs do the... I mean, I've stopped so many people. We've got into... Well, I don't cause a blazing row. I've just said to them, excuse me. You know, why are you coming on the football pitch when you've got all that?
Sacred land.
What's it got to do with effing you and what's it got to do with that? And I said, well, yeah, but it's not right, is it? I'm involved and I know the people. Come and play games on this football pitch. And you don't have to start off by saying to the players, take a shovel and a bucket, go pick it up and stuff like that. So if there are dog walkers out there, just think a little bit more. It's ignorance, really. These people know what they're doing. But they want to, and some do it deliberately, thinking, why should they have that pitch? You know, why can't we walk our dog on it?
It's not ideal for a county FA or anyone that's looking to sort of change the landscape of football when, you know, there's certain things that are out of our control. The weather's one that we usually get blamed for.
Yeah.
I must admit, we aren't doing enough to change the weather. We really should be doing more to try and affect that. I don't know what we can do, but we should. And dog walkers, I'm not sure whether... In the new national game strategy, we should have set aside some money for dog wardens. It does seem that way, according to some of the social media posts we get. But yeah,
just send David
there
out. David can
listen. By the sounds of it, I think we should get David a county blazer. Put him out on the pitches on a Sunday morning, and we'd all be all right.
I know a lot of people who play football. A lot of people I know. If you ask them to tick a box, what are your hobbies? Playing football, they would tick it. But they play on a Thursday night for an hour at one of these indoor centres, you know, these goals or these five-a-side centres, because they go down, they know what the facilities are like, they just want it in and out in an hour, they go down in their kit, blah, 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 done, quick beer afterwards with this team, that's it. Not bothered about who they play against, what they're doing, some of them get competitive about it, but that isn't going to solve some of these issues, is it? I think there is a big proportion of people doing that.
Oh, there is.
But you need to convert them, don't you, and actually say, get out there and almost do it properly.
There is, and do you know what? I think the days of saying that proper football have gone. Yeah. We, like I've said before, we run a league now that's probably our most successful league. It's the most desirable product we've got on a midweek night in Leeds, floodlit central venue, so you're not traveling all over the county. It's the Flexi League. You can join that this season. So you do turn up, play 11 aside. I'm going to use the term proper football. It's for an hour. You've got an appointed ref. You have no admin. You turn up, play a game, go home. And that is in direct response to the movement that you've just talked about. Yeah. People wanting a midweek football offer. And they're playing five-a-side at the moment. But you'd always rather play 11.
Yes.
That's probably an outspoken view. But you would always rather play 11-a-side with a proper ref and on a proper pitch. And playing under floodlights midweek, you do get delusions of grandeur sometimes. And that's what you do it
right.
for.
You know? I can't work my magic on the right touchline, you see, when on a five-a-side pitch.
Well, I must admit, I always struggle because we play on a Thursday night on a 3G pitch and under the lights with your all-white Galacticos kit on that we play on a Thursday night. Yeah. I'm not saying we take it too seriously. And then turn up on a Sunday to bedquilts and... I must admit, the pitch has done me no favours before. No. So there's a lot of players. There's a lot of players like that though who love that on a 3G or an indoor surface. It is better, isn't it, Tom? I mean, you know as much as I do.
Yes.
Going out on a Sunday morning at 10:30 to Armley Park in the rain.
You just don't want to battle against anything else, do you?
You just don't need it sometimes. No. And I totally appreciate that because I've turned up on a game and felt it myself. So we do need to adapt for those guys who want indoor or small-sided. And the other thing is fitness as well. It's much easier to run around for 30 minutes on a small-sided game than try and throw yourself into...
That's why I was always a late sub.
There we go.
I was just a late sub. Just bring me on for 5 minutes at the end. That's
I'm
all I
trying
all
to
you
recruit
need.
You for a Thursday night league.
No, I'm busy. That goes against everything we've been talking about. So it's an awful, awful attitude to show. David, just want your thoughts on what we were talking about there as well, about the grassroots game, the participation and the national team. How important is it for you that things are improved at grassroots, more people play, you know, coaching gets better to make a success of the national team? Because we have seen this work. It's worked in Germany, it's worked in Spain, it's worked in France. These generations of the Spanish team have all started a system. We've got St. George's Park now, that's all in place. But at real grassroots level, you've got to get as many people playing the game to have a chance of getting the best players.
Well, of course you have, yeah. And a lot of it does come down to coaching, as Daniel said. You know, if there's better coaching, I mean, for years and years, it has been parents, mums, dads, and two of us started the Leeds Sports Awards some years ago, and for the first two or three years, some of the awards that we gave, I mean, one was a lovely lady from, I think it was Swillington, and she'd been coaching juniors for something like 50 or 60 years, and she was in her 80s.
Wow.
Well, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, this woman had given so much time and effort to do it. But obviously, she wasn't a qualified coach. And it's like anything. I mean, I play tennis all my life. I've been mad keen on the game. And there will be possibly one or two people listening thinking, well, yeah, he could have done with some coaching. So you do need good qualified coaches. You know, not just Tom, Dick or Harry. I mean, that sounds derogatory. I don't mean it like that. But just anybody else. Coaching with the best will in the world, they're giving the time, they're helping, they're doing things, but a proper qualified coach is essential.
It's amazing what the small changes can make as well. Just some of the insight that I'm not a qualified coach, but some of the insight that I've gained off observing courses and being around coaches has changed massively. It does really change the enjoyment of the game for some of the players, and as a player myself, understanding a bit more about the game has really helped, like I say, participation and enjoyment. So it's not about going through the whole coaching qualifications and saying, go do your UEFA B licence and your pro licence. Just have a little bit of an understanding of it. It's free to access. You might as well, as a keen observer in football, you might as well have that knowledge, because it is really, really interesting.
I think it would help.
But sometimes it's about money as well. I mean, having been a social worker, I've had it has been a privilege, without a doubt, of meeting people in this city from all walks of life. Some very, very, very needy families that people would never imagine that people are living in those circumstances. For other people, I've met lots of other people that are plenty of money, living in fabulous surroundings and everything else, because people of all walks of life have problems, don't they? Whether it's mental health or it's childcare or whatever. you know. But at the end of the day, it comes down to money, because there are quite a lot of families with kids that would love to participate more. But it always comes to money, because even if they're in the local club, they want a fiver or £2 a week subs, and they want this and they want that. And a lot of those clubs, with the best will in the world, will try and accept that person, say, well, you don't have to. But not all clubs can afford to do that, because they're desperate. St Margaret's, where you spent £10,000 a year, this is going back some years now, to run the club. Now, today, if you said to a club, well, you're going to need 10 grand, you know, you to buy kits, you to pay FA Cup fees, FA Vars fees, whatever you're doing, whichever competition you're in, County Cups and everything else, it costs money. Insurance. Now, the county quite rightly say you must have some insurance to cover your players and everything else. But that costs money. Everything costs money. And washing the kit costs money, you know. And at the end of the day, that puts people off. And families with, well, I don't like the word underprivileged or deprived, because it makes it sound as though they're strange people. But people that cannot afford to pay for their children to attend coaching courses or to do this or do that, they're not going to be encouraged as much. And some of those, I mean, I've got a friend that is a UEFA B coach in this city, and I'm sure Danny will probably know him. And his son's a brilliant footballer. And I'm sure with the right sort of progress, he may well be considered, although if his father's listening, he's a Scot. So he'll be wanting to play for Scotland, but, I mean, he ought to play for England. Well, and he's fabulous young player. You know, they've got to have that commitment. The parents have to have that commitment, don't they? Yeah. As well as the child.
Because it's the it's the social economic benefits of more people playing football. It's not only health reasons as well, of course, but, you know, integrating it with regard to sort of building relationships with people and that sense of community. And the benefits are absolutely huge. Go on, Dan, you wanted to make a point, didn't you?
Yeah, it was just saying about the bursaries that they're offering. We are physically giving off your FA level 2, which is the most sort of, it's an entry level qualification, really. Yeah. You don't need to have done anything else to access it. For hundreds of coaches in West Riding now, we're giving £100 off that to make it as affordable as we possibly can. With other schemes that are going on, you can access it. Usually clubs can put one or two coaches through that, and it will really help. So we do totally appreciate what David just said about money being a major issue, and we're trying to reduce the cost of that as much as we can.
It's also time consuming, isn't it? Because some of these people have to commit themselves when they've got a family, they're perhaps working all hours God sent to keep themselves, you know, going and things.
It just
and pay
drops
all
down
the bills.
The priorities,
do you know what though? I've been amazed time and time again. People find time for football, as you know.
Oh yeah.
People find time for football. They don't find time for other things. So.
No, that's right. And just a final point, going back to that tweet, and again a topic that's raised a bit about the Premier League's money, and maybe even local professional clubs in the region, the likes of Leeds, Bradford, Huddersfield, and others. Is more responsibility on them, or does it, or is that unfair on those clubs? Because I think of the Premier League, and I think they have untold amounts of money. And even if every player gave up a day's wage and put it into charities or even grassroots scheme, what a difference it would make. But why should they? What interest is it in of theirs to improve the grassroots? I suppose for a club like Leeds or clubs that in the local area players are playing, they can scout them. But what we've seen now is even if a young lad's coming through 8-9, he looks like he's got talent, Man City are over here, bang. So is there any responsibility on professional football clubs, Premier League and the Football League, to contribute?
For me, it's not the FA's position to try and strong-arm the Premier League or any of the pro clubs into contributing.
It's a battle they wouldn't win anyway, isn't it?
No, listen, and the clubs do more than most people think. Locally, we're looking to do as much more with the pro clubs, and I'm not talking about Leeds United and Huddersfield Town and Bradford City, who are three pro clubs, writing big cheques and saying you can go develop some football for us and we'll pick off your players. But there are ways that they can probably be more involved in community football, and there's ways that it can be at the heart of the community more. It's something that we'd really welcome involvement with them.
Because, for example, if Leeds United made a big song and dance about the roadshows you've got and, you know, participation and directed you somewhere, that is a huge, powerful thing, because so many people in the city will listen to what Leeds United say. Getting that message out there is so important.
It's the biggest brand in the city by far. It's like I say, it's football. People engage with it. You talk about the events that we're trying to organise. People who are fans of Leeds United are fans of football, and they have an insight into what the game should look like. They've either played it or they've got kids who play it. They might not be involved right now because there might be season ticket holders at Elland Road. So there might be people listening to this saying, I'm not involved in grassroots football, but I think I know what should be done. I've got a big emotional tie to the game. And if Leeds United did put that message out as a bit of a call to action, we'd get them involved as well. And they can be game changers. I'm not excluding anybody from saying your opinion's not worthy because you're not involved in it. Because that's just not at all what
I think
what
that's
we're
great.
Because
I think if you're a male, female, and you're too old to play, you've got an injury, you maybe don't have kids or kids that want to play or whatever.
Yeah.
You can, but you've got a passion for the game. You're still getting. But you don't have to have a direct link there. You can still get involved.
It definitely, and it's something that we're really trying to keep the question very, very simple. It's the question that you opened up the show with tonight. It's the question that we're going to be asking time and time again. How should the FA spend its money to improve the game in West Yorkshire? Anyone can have a say on that. Anybody at all. We are welcoming people to join us and have that say live now. Get us on Twitter whenever you want.
Yeah.
Call us up, email us, whatever you want to do. I mean, you've alluded to it already, but we're running a state of the game roadshow almost. We're going to take this discussion that we're having now on the road, invite clubs in. Unfortunately, we can't get that many guests in this studio. I'd love to have had 5 or 10 clubs and the council and everyone else in. But on the 25th of September, come to the County FA. You can sign up online for this. We're going to really hear everybody's views, air grievances, tell us what's great, tell us what's terrible. The council will hopefully be there. There'll be representation from them. There'll be as many clubs as we can under one roof. Whoever you are, whether you've got an opinion on it and you think, oh, do you know what? I don't know whether this is particularly relevant. Or even if you just want to hear what's going on, we'll stand up in front of people and tell them where the money's going. We'll tell them what the national game strategy looks like over the next 4 years to West Yorkshire. And it's not just, imagine question time, but just for grassroots football and just in West Yorkshire, that's what we're going to do. Get all the football stakeholders in one room. Like I say, get online, West Riding County FA's website, sign up to it. It's called State of the Game. You'll see it on the homepage. This is a campaign that doesn't end tonight. It doesn't end on social media. We're on 24/7 on social media. Just keep using that hashtag, engaging with us under the title State of the Game. And we will take your views and they will be put to the decision makers, the council, the directors, our council members, our chief exec. We've got buy-in from all the football stakeholders in the city now. So please, if you've got an opinion and it's through you're a Leeds United fan or you work at Oxford St Margaret's or you're just Joe Bloggs in Leeds Market who sees kids walking about with Man United shirts on and you think they should be Leeds United shirts. That's a big one.
That's me.
Like, let's get involved, let's talk about it, because we can change that. We've got the resources, the time, the money, the skills, the expertise to do it, but we need your opinion to shape it.